After 25 years in the fashion industry, I've realized that fashion is not really about the clothes, it's about the people. I'm Laura Van Root Poole, and this is What We Wore. Jean Prentice is a young designer who creates jewelry rich with history and stories of family. I was inspired by her commitment to her heritage, the team that has become her family, and her deep creativity. Jean, thank you so much for being on the podcast, especially on a holiday weekend.
Of course. It's my pleasure. We're so excited to work with Capital. It's really a dream come true.
Likewise, when I saw the jewelry, I had never seen it before, and the girls came back from Las Vegas, and it was sort of everything I'd always been looking for. I mean, it's so beautiful. And Jean, is it 18 karat?
No, our entire line is 22 karat gold.
I could tell it was so warm and soft. The color was so, so beautiful. And it looked like, I have to tell you, when I was in Greece after I'd spent a semester in Italy, the only thing I wanted was this coin necklace that I had in my head that, you know, didn't exist. And then I found it and it looked so much like your work.
Wow.
That I thought it's like that thing I was looking for when I was 19 years old.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like that kind of those travel, you know, experiences or souvenirs rather, that's such a part of inspiration for me.
Well, I also think that it looks so much like, I mean, I'm obsessed with Elizabethan portraits and it looks so much like the jewels in Elizabethan portraits.
Yes, I have a lot of pins of those portraits on my
You do? Yeah. Jean, where are you from?
So I'm from New York and my family's been New York based since my great grandparents came over from Greece on my dad's side. And then on my mother's side, they came over from Germany and Canada. So we've been New York based for three generations now. And New York is such an inspiration for me with my business and everything's produced here.
Wow.
Yeah, we've got deep roots. So I grew up on Long Island, but just outside of the city. So any chance I had, starting even as early as middle school, I would be in the city. And that started really with classes that I took at FIT.
Oh, wow.
I did a pre-middle school program there, if you can believe.
What, really?
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. After school program.
It was on, it was like a 2-week program when I was 11 and I actually lied. And actually I was 11 and I had to be 12 to enter, but I was so desperate to go. I shouldn't say that actually. I'll get my parents in trouble.
Were you always interested in fashion?
Yeah. I always loved, just more so like self-expression through fashion, through objects, through decorating. It's always been an outlet for me to find out who I am through what I like to collect and wear and design.
Did you study fashion in school or did you go to school for?
So I did like high school classes at FIT on the weekends, but there came a time where, I feel like a lot of kids go through this, especially like, I switched to bio. I went to school for biology because it
felt
more, I always loved science, but it felt like a pressure almost then to go into something non-creative. And so I tried that out for really just a semester. but when you're doing that college search, you're really looking for like, where am I going to major? What am I going to do? And I chose a school that had a really strong science program and a strong art program because I always knew that was so me, creative pursuits. So when I went to school and I kind of was failing chemistry and whatnot, I was like, this isn't working. So that summer I took a course in ancient metalsmithing, which is where I was really introduced to goldsmithing, and it immediately resonated.
Where did you go to school?
I went to Skidmore College in upstate New York.
Nice. How fascinating that they had that.
Yeah. Oh, so no, I took that course in the city.
Okay, good. I'm like, really? Skidmore?
Okay. Not at Skidmore. It was a very small jewelry program, but I was lucky that they had one just in general. But yeah.
And so when you went back that second sophomore year, did you go fully into art?
Yeah, I immediately switched to studio art and kind of also focused in business as a minor. And I always had an entrepreneurial side that, came from my parents. They were both entrepreneurs, or they've retired now.
And were they supportive, your parents?
Yeah, they've always been supportive ever since I've been young. I remember my dad was the one who found these FIT courses when I was in middle school or going into them. And it was, yeah, they've always been very supportive of me in creativity or creative pursuits, but also in, businesses. They've been so helpful having been business owners themselves. There's the creative part of the business, but there's also so
You have to make money.
much more.
You actually have to sell the things.
Yeah.
So what was your medium in studio art? What did you were you a
So
painter?
primarily jewelry.
Oh, so you could do it.
Yeah, there was a jewelry concentration there. My bachelor's degree was in studio art, but yeah, concentration in jewelry and metals. I mean, I didn't start in gold. I mostly worked in brass because the brass is really difficult to work with by hand in terms of fabrication. But I was like, I must work in brass. It's like a yellow metal. And I've just been so drawn to yellow gold my whole entire life. So once I started working in it, gold itself, or really 22 karat, it was just like a match made in heaven.
Wow. Had you had a love for jewelry growing up?
I would say jewelry, my attraction to it really came from traveling and from visiting different museums. The woman in my family certainly had beautiful jewelry, but the jewelry that has inspired me for my collection, it's one charged with history and story, which they have.
Yeah.
I just always was so enamored when we'd visit a different city and see the connection of like what might be at the British Museum and what's at the Met or what's at the Benaki Museum in Athens, and seeing,
I love the Benaki.
oh, it's so cool.
That's my favorite
Me
museum.
too. I love it.
And so I know just my little research of you that you have a really interesting family history.
Yeah. The Prunus side of the family came to New York in the early 1900s, and they came over from Greece. The Prunus family is from a small village in Greece called Metsevu in northern Greece. It's very alpine. It has a lot of Ottoman influences. So they came over, and my great-grandfather, Otto Prunus, he worked his way up the restaurant industry at where he kind of started out as a busboy. He came over at 13 years old and alone, really, and worked his way. So once he was older, he co-owned this cabaret club or supper club called the Versailles, which is where I get a lot of inspiration for my branding, the stories that go behind our packaging, the brand color. Everything at the Versailles was this sage green, which so fun because when you look at the photos, it's all black and white. But then I have all of like the tablecloths and the silverware and the menus, and then that's where the color really comes to light.
And where was it located?
It was in the town, which is where I am now, so like that connection. But it was right across from the Waldorf Astoria. It was one of Edith Piaf's first U.S. contracts. They actually brought her over to New York for her first American show.
Wow.
Yeah, and she had a bit of a residency there. And yeah, it was just like this star-studded, marvelous restaurant.
And what was it that made it such a hot spot?
I think, the performers they had, and I mean, of that time too, just the glamour. It was one of those spots that was just to the nines. So people, flocked to that type of place.
Do you remember stories from your grandparents about it growing up?
Yeah, my grandfather definitely, he created such an extensive archive of all the headshots and the newspaper clippings from the club. So growing up, he would really take the time to educate me about our family history and the Versailles. So that was so important to my design process and the brand now.
Any favorite stories about people that were there other than Edith Piaf, which is incredible?
Well, I mean, I have this really beautiful letter from my grandfather that was to my dad to share with me when I was older of all
Oh,
the
wow.
performers who were there. And, there's over like 200. That I would say is my most cherished, because
Yeah.
I was still like in middle school when they passed, so I didn't really, maybe perhaps retain those stories, or perhaps I was too young to hear of them about what goes on in the club. But yeah, not so much. But yeah, it's definitely that letter.
And then how does your family history and that and sort of this legacy of entrepreneurship, how did that influence you in starting your own brand?
I'd say I launched Prunus really as a vehicle to tell these stories of my love for antiquities and my family heritage. And it feels like an ongoing conversation that I'm having with my grandfather to thank him for this archive that he's left me and my family. And also, yeah, it's a way for me to connect with my parents, to be able to have their advice on business decisions and strategy.
Were your parents, were they in restaurants as
Oh no,
well?
so
No.
they were not. Yeah, they my father was in software, and then my mother was in pharmaceutical advertising. So
So absolutely not.
yeah.
That was more your biology part of your brain.
Yeah. Exactly.
And so right out of Skidmore, did you start your collection right then?
About a year and a half later, so for a year and a
Yeah.
half I had worked and interned, well, freelance then, for other designers,
All jewelry.
two jewelry jobs, yeah, for design, and then I also had some odd jobs. But throughout that year and a half, I was designing for family and friends, doing special commissions. I'd dedicate like a day or two to those projects for my own self. And
Yeah.
it just felt like a natural progression to really build out a collection.
And how did you know how to do that? I mean, was that did had you learned that at Skidmore, or did you know that from interning, or like how did
Interning really was pivotal in being able to see how certain businesses operated. And I wish I did have, say, a few more years under my belt of working at other businesses, because I did launch the brand quite young, but we've been really, able to craft what works for our team now. But yeah, the internships were very helpful to see. Like, I worked at one startup where I was the first intern, so I got to see how she organized her business. And then I also worked at a much larger, like, corporate designer.
Yeah.
So having those two experiences were really important.
And I think jewelry, so it seems so simple, but it seems also a little complicated in that, for me, I only wear rings and earrings. I mean, sometimes neck, I don't know, like there are certain things that you really love and prefer, but to understand how to merchandise an entire collection and how to build a collection that makes sense, even if there are things that you don't if you don't wear bracelets or things like that, and to understand why that's important. Was that something innate in you, or did you have to have a team in order to understand that part of it?
I think that was innate in the, first couple launches I did of our ch different chapters, we call them. So each chapter is kind of a continuation of this story we're telling through the jewelry. But as time moves on, my team definitely helps kind of
Yeah.
guide. Hey, we need some like
We need some
earrings under
studs.
$10,000. Like, yeah. Yeah. So they definitely help keep me grounded and keep a nice range of pieces.
Yeah.
But one thing that I love to use as a source of inspiration that I mentioned is like these historic or institutional museum collections, like at the Met, say, where you don't necessarily see like a matchy-matchy collection. And I love to like create chapters or collections that are a bit mix-match. So not
Yeah.
everything has, say, the same component to it, but I like to use, say, like one word. So right now we're designing a collection where it's about twists, like twisted wire or rope. So That I like to
Yeah.
dissect and analyze in different ways. So not everything is going to incorporate a twisted element.
And I always think that's so complicated too for me. I talked to Brent Neal about that. Like, how do you know when something looks like you other than that you made it, I guess. Like I the language of jewelry is so subtle, but also like how do you know when you introduce a new collection that it really feels like Prunus?
Right. I hope that like sticking to my intuition of design, and when I did launch, I really took the time to create a brand DNA. Like conscious luxury, there's certain words that fill out, that box, I'd say, where contemporary but refined, homage or ode to classics. And then within that, there are certain like stones or techniques that I set boundaries with that we use within the collection. So everything will always have a matte finish that, shines as you wear it, and the piece is finished after you're wearing it. So making sure that each new design fits these points.
And every time you introduce a new piece, do you literally go through each of those words and make sure that they fit?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's been a handful of pieces that we've designed fully finished, and I'm like, you know what? No, we can't launch this. It doesn't feel like me or us at this point.
At this point, it's a team. Do you still make everything by hand?
No, but I do development. So, in terms of our actual like collections production, everything's made in New York, and that's something I'm committed to. I love how historical the jewelry industry is here in New York, and we work with a beautiful team of artisans. And most pieces touch the benches of like 3 to 5 different
Wow.
people.
What part of the process, the creative process, is the most important to you?
What comes to mind initially is like the grounding process to get into the headspace for creativity, because as I mentioned earlier, like there's the creative side of the business and then there's the selling side of the business. To enter each one, I have to really, mentally prepare myself and set kind of the atmosphere. So for inspiration and creativity, I have certain just like grounding practices, like either I meditate or these things called brain dumps, where it's just a really nice cleansing of my brain to then like see what, to create anew then.
And is that a practice that you learned in art school in college, or is it something you developed on your own?
Something I developed on my own, and with help of like I worked with this life coach who's really helpful. She's like a creative life coach.
Amazing. And tell me about that.
Oh, I mean, she's wonderful. She really just helps me keep my creativity and through practices, because it's so easy in a small business and a small growing business to get lost in the minutia.
Yeah, all the processes.
Right, exactly. So taking a moment, pausing, creating time to be creative is so important. So she helps me create that kind of structure for myself, because I'm definitely a creative first, and it's a bit it can be, I don't know how to call, me waving my hands, because I know no one has that.
It can be hand wavy. Do you remember, Jean, the first piece that you made that felt like it was your first piece of the collection? Because you said you were making things for family members, but what was the first piece that really
I'm
felt
actually
like?
wearing it right now, so that's helpful.
Oh, wow.
And I like to wear this during interviews because of that. It is the first piece I made. It's the first one that felt like, wow, this feels different from what's out there, and this feels like me. But it's our rune ring. Which features now, we offer it in a six-sided version or an eight-sided version, but it's this ring that I designed to look like it was found from an archaeological dig. So it's misshapen, the bezels on the, where in which the cabochons are set, are they definitely have a heavy mark on them. So I left tool marks and with intention to have the piece feel aged and storied. So that when I made it, while I was making, I was like, oh, this feels like, maybe to one person that it's botched, but to me, I see like the beauty and the imperfections of the piece, which is what I feel like our collectors really appreciate. I don't necessarily do it to the extent of my first piece anymore. Like things are misshapen or dented or whatnot. But I think the hand touch of handmade pieces is really important to leave, and those idiosyncrasies are cherished by our clients, because so much of like say mass-produced pieces, they have like just beautifully polished, so this is definitely the opposite.
When it feel and it, I'm sure it feels like it's yours from the minute you put it on.
Right. Yeah.
Is it pink tourmaline?
So these are actually garnets. Yeah,
Oh wow.
they're really pale
Oh, pretty.
garnets.
And tell me about stones. Do you have stones that you love the
I
most?
love tourmalines. You just
Yeah, I do too. I mean, there's so many different colors.
Exactly. Oh, I love a yellow tourmaline too. Sapphires are great, especially because they're so varicolored. Like, I love a star.
Yellow
Yeah,
sapphire.
yellow sapphire, star sapphire. One year in Tucson, bought this whole parcel of tumbled sapphires that, like, in every different color. And I just love them because they're also organic in form, but not too organic in form. It's like, this perfect middle ground. But yeah, I'd say sapphires and tourmalines. I love aquamarines, and I've gotten really into turquoise in the past couple of years.
Me too.
Yeah, we're working on some exciting turquoise earrings for you as an exclusive that
Oh,
customer. Yeah.
good. Speaking of stones and the jewelry industry, is there anything exciting about the future of jewelry and the jewelry industry that keeps you coming back?
Yeah, I mean, one thing here that's really interesting that has kind of opened my mind more during the pandemic as a need to source new material, but not new, but old material that exists. So we see that with our clients who bring in heirloom stones. To me, it's so important to use what exists. And so I've been now trying to use that as one of those new DNA points of like, can we find this as a dead stock stone or a post-consumer stone? Does it exist somewhere else outside of something modern or newly mined material? So looking towards that way with like a sustainable mindset, but also, often the pieces that are dead stock or post-consumer or antique materials have a very different feel to them. They're romantic. The cuts are so much different from what we see now. And so it's so unique. And I think, that's something I've been trying to source more with in terms of stones and kind of with a future mindset for how we can keep, sustainability out of the core of our business.
And do you believe, like Marie-Hélène de Tayac, that stones carry memories and powers? Because I don't know if I told the story when I spoke with her, but she made this incredible sapphire ring for me ages ago. And it was really spectacular. And it was stolen by a masseuse, a massage therapist. And it was one of the more devastating things in the world. Really, it was so upsetting because it was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. And I saw Marie-Hélène, several weeks after it happened, and I was crying, telling her about it. And she said, "Oh, no. That stone wasn't meant for you." I mean, she said, "I feel sorry for the person that stole it because obviously now they have whatever was in that stone." But I always thought it was like the best lesson.
That's a beautiful way of looking at it too,
And she wasn't disturbed by it at all. She was just like, "Oh no, that was not meant for you. We thought it was, but it wasn't." But I think about, like, I mean, even like Golconda diamonds and, old mine diamonds, you think like, wow, these were mined in the 1700s. I mean, like, it's so
It
incredible.
is. It's stunning.
And passed from family to family. I mean,
Right. The
within
legacy
families.
of the stones is so incredible. Yeah. And answering your question about stones, I guess I look more towards the gold that we use. So I love looking at the gold as, this enhancement of the stone, but also as the focal point. And together they just create a beautiful energy, because I think the gold is what I find to be so grounding. My favorite part of the piece.
Well, I mean, you can tell because the gold is so beautiful. So, the fashion industry is tough. What continues to make you motivated and inspired to stay in it? It's a tough business.
It's definitely, it's a lot of hard work too. And I think, there's so many things, but in particular, it's the collectors we work with, the relationships, retail partners we work with, and how we all kind of inspire each other with the goal of sharing and selling and creating beautiful objects for people to carry legacy, intention, and stories in. Giving someone a vehicle to be able to share, say, the excitement of a firstborn or a marriage, giving people these objects is so rewarding. I love working with people in that way. And, often we have clients come into our showroom, or we'll work with, our retailers who are working with a client. And I just love hearing the story or the intention behind the piece. Or like, my client is looking to renew their vows, and they're looking towards to this band and XYZ. Like, the reason why is why what keeps me inspired and motivated is to keep being able to create pieces for their reason why. And
And something like that, I mean, the person that's with them constantly, I mean, 24 hours a day, you look at it all day long. I mean, it's a real part of their lives.
And that's also like I design with that intention, knowing that this is not, not part of, it's part of their life now. It's part of their story. And I've never heard a client of ours be like, "What will I wear this with?" Like, "Oh, you wear it every day. You don't have to think about it."
Especially with the gold. I mean, I think I do hear it a little bit with stones sometimes. People will say like, "Oh, I don't know if it'll match enough things." And I'm like, "But gold, all of the
So,
things." What does success for Prudence look like for you? Is there a milestone that you'd want to reach? Or a feeling that you'd like to have?
I feel like we are succeeding, and I love my team dearly, and coming to work every day feels like success because we it just feels like family. So in a way, I feel like that right now is we are achieving success, but moving forward, adding to our family, growing our team, that growing our collector base and our connections with people are definitely, my goals for success. Right now I'm trying to remain focused on jewelry, but I'd love to, expand into scent interiors to create a full experience of Prunus, and what that means. So I try to do that in other ways right now with different collaborations, but it would be great to fully dive into those.
I was telling somebody jewelry is a long game also because I think you people typically buy things for occasions, and it takes almost a year to know how much you loved a piece, and to say, I've worn that every single day. I'm definitely going to buy another piece from Prunus, And so it's a lo it really is a long game. It's not kind of like, oh, that sweater is really soft, I'm going to get another one.
That's very
It's
true.
like, I have loved this piece. I want more.
Once you buy one piece, and that's like how I like to design as well, is that everything works together. You can buy any three of our rings and wear them all together. It's not going to feel misplaced or mismatched.
Have a really important question. Can't wait to hear your answer. What did you wear to the prom?
Oh, you're not gonna believe this, but I wore a gold dress.
No, you did not. Oh my gosh, Jean, I love that so much. Oh my gosh. 22 carat.
It
Tell
was
me
a,
about
no, I mean, it looked like 22 karat. It was, I don't know. Do you remember Filene's Basement?
Of
My
course.
favorite. So
Me
I,
too.
yeah, I loved it. So I found this gold Missoni knit dress that
Wow.
strapless and kind of a bit of a wrap. Oh, and it was.
How did it stay up? Missoni, because it was knit,
It was
right?
knit, but it had kind of like a corset at the
Wow.
top to hold up. And oh my gosh, yeah.
And what did you wear jewelry?
I did. I okay, so my the earrings I wore were from Henri Bendel. Missed that store. No fun.
I know, I did too.
Yeah. They were these long gold chandelier earrings. And I can't remember what shoes, but probably gold. I've been loyal to gold since the beginning.
Old friends,
Our
BFFs.
old
God,
friends.
that is so good. That's probably one of the chicest prom dresses I've heard about. Did you have your hair up?
I had it halfway up, yeah.
Wait, and did your date just have a regular
Yeah, he just
tuxedo?
wore a
No.
tux, yeah.
You didn't make him wear a gold bow tie and cover up.
I should have, yeah.
You should have. Oh, well. Thank you so much.
Oh, of course, thank you. And we're so excited to have our collection at Capitol.
What We Wore is produced by Capitol and Balto Creative Media. The original song, Someone So Enchanting, was composed and performed by Britt Drazda. QueenCityPodcastNetwork.com.